You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
Welcome to the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast with your hosts, Kyle Borgannoni and Matthew Betts.
Well, welcome in. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, Matthew Betts and I, we are back once again with the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. Betts, I'm looking at your glorious face right now. How are you, buddy?
Glorious. Matches the face, I guess. No, I'm doing well, man. I'm excited to officially, I feel like, start draft season here on the show, talking about NFL draft props today a little bit, which I'm very excited to do. We're also going to talk a little bit about these crazy moves with these wide receivers, how it affects the betting markets, those kind of things. So it should be a great show. Kyle, how are you doing today, man?
You know, I'm coming off an episode we did with the Footballers where the Liar Liar segment was really fun to put together. I feel like I got to conspire against the guys, Brooks and I, Jeremy. We really just got to put our heads together. And although we lost, this is how I'm coping with the first ever loss in the history of Liar Liar is math had to win out. Like the analytics said that one day, the guys would win, and they did this time. So it's actually a victory for math more than anything. So I feel fine.
And honestly, I mean, it was a victory for everyone because of the mailbag drop that you did. So if you listened, I mean, how could you not laugh at that? I actually put that out today on Twitter. I said that was probably the hardest I've laughed at a show in a very, very long time, like legitimately laughing out loud multiple times. It was great. So if you missed it, please go back and check it out. Kyle, I feel like that was a big show for you, man. Big show.
I feel like I just had to commit to that because the mailbag drop obviously is a big deal, but it, if anything, I feel like it's something that my voice cannot hit. Like my voice could crack and someone could hear me like a, you know, 14-year-old boy, or they could hear me in a really, really deep way. So yes, go back if you want to listen to that Liar Liar episode. We also broke down a lot of free agency on that episode. And that's kind of my quick question before we get into NFL draft props and strategy and, you know, you and I are going to finish this episode with another one of our bold or cold predictions. I want to get into a quick question here. Which major offseason move, right? And people are basically calling this the craziest offseason. Jason called it a frat party. It's kind of been nonstop. Which offseason move, in your opinion, changes the needle less than we think in terms of win totals, which is something you and I are going to be talking about in the upcoming weeks? So which move do you think doesn't move the needle as much as we think?
Yeah, I think this is probably a little bit of a controversial take. I'm going to say Tyreek Hill to the Dolphins.
And how dare you?
I know. Don't hear what I'm not saying, listeners. Tyreek Hill is a game changer. If you watch the playoffs with the Bills game, of course, the slant across the middle, he takes it, what, 75 yards to the house. Like, there's one or two players in the league that can do that. So Tyreek Hill definitely affects the game. He's an absolute, game breaker. He's awesome. But I want to quote Eric Eager from PFF. He put this out on Twitter. They have a metric, it's called WAR, so wins above replacement. That metric for Hill, which looks at basically how much do you add to a team's production and win total over the last 3 years, 0.39, 0.45, and 0.48. So even if you round up, basically you're looking at half of a win per season that he adds to your team. It doesn't feel like a lot, right? Like if the market's going to tell me that the Dolphins go from, you know, 9.5 wins to all of a sudden now they're at 10.5 wins just because they got Tyreek Hill, I'm probably going to be fading that notion. I mean, you also look at the other factors here at play with Miami. And while I am very excited about the moves they're making, you know, Tyron Armstead, obviously Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle in year two, new coaching staff. You also look at who they're playing. Like they play the Bills twice, the Patriots twice. Obviously, those are tough in-division games. They also play the AFC North. So these four elite quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, maybe Deshaun Watson, and of course, your boy, Mitch Trubisky, you know, it's tough. That's a tough out. And then you also look too, and in the NFC, who they're playing, the Packers, the Chargers, the Niners, like, it's a lot that has to go right, especially for a first-time head coach. So I'm not sure it moves the needle as much in the betting markets as maybe most people think.
I would agree. So the Chargers last year were 9-8. If you remember, they start off the year, they won against the Patriots in week one, and then they lost, what, 7 or 8 straight, and then they finished on a tear. So finished at 9-8. Their win expectation, which is something Betts and I will talk about more, was 7.6. So they overachieved in that in terms of how many points they scored and how much they allowed. You're asking a lot for a first-time head coach to get 10 wins. So, yeah, I'm looking at what their Vegas total was last year. It was 9 wins. And I think that was a team that I mostly stayed away from because I thought the line was really great. It was dead on. I know you were big on the Dolphins at the beginning of the year. And then, obviously, they had injuries. They had lots of other things going on. Their offensive line was terrible. But we need to think about these teams in terms of their actual schedule. I love that you brought that up. This is who they're playing. Like, this is who they're actually playing. And this is what needs to happen for Tyreek to actually contribute and get this team to 11 wins. Like, in that division, would you still say they're the third best team?
I mean, I personally wouldn't even need to say that, like, as a hot take. Like, that's just what Vegas is telling us when you look at the division odds that are currently available for the winner of the division. They're third behind, obviously, the Bills. They're first. And then the Vegas odds have the Patriots as the second most likely team to win the division. And then it's the Dolphins, and sadly, fourth is the Jets. So, yeah, I don't even think that's a hot take. I think that's probably pretty accurate. Like I said, it just seems like there's a lot that needs to go right for this all to come together in year one for Mike McDaniel's team.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So, Betts and I, we have entire episodes where we break down the win totals. Some of my favorite we do in the offseason, so stay tuned with that. I'm going to say Davante Adams. And as somebody that has Davante Adams in a couple of different spots, like on... in one of my main leagues, he's my keeper. Like, I love Davante Adams. I love him as a player. Raiders are still fourth in that division in terms of odds. They're at plus 700. Last year, the Raiders were 10-7, but their win expectation was 6.9. They were 7-2 in one-score games, including their final four. So this team overachieved with what they had last year. And when I look at their schedule, so I've started the process where I go through every single game of the season. We know who everybody's playing. We know the home and away. We don't actually know the order, but regardless of the order of the schedule, I went through and I have the Raiders at 8.5 wins. That feels like a safe, I mean, 9 wins, I think you could say 9 wins, but in a division where we like all teams, there's actually a bet, I don't know if you saw this, on DraftKings, that's all 4 teams in the AFC West to make the playoffs. It's like plus 2,000 if you say yes.
That's worth 10 bucks.
There's no, I will say that. Yeah. It's not factoring in injuries or anything like that. But when I look at their schedule, I have them at 8.5 wins. They play the NFC West and the AFC South. The AFC South's not great. But I feel like the Raiders are a team that I just, they're the fourth best team in that division, in my opinion.
You know, the interesting thing about that too, like, you know, obviously the Raiders are a team in the same division as the Chiefs, and we just kind of talked about Tyreek Hill leaving the Chiefs. I was really surprised to see the market not really shift that much in terms of the Super Bowl odds for Kansas City or the division odds. Like, they're still the favorites. I think they went from plus 800 to plus 900 to win the Super Bowl, so it's a little bit of a downgrade without Tyreek Hill, but it's not a huge shift. And so, yeah, I think that kind of speaks to just like how maybe the Raiders, even with this move, might not be moving the needle as much as maybe people think. So the betting market's telling us otherwise.
When those come out, we actually get win totals, which will be coming up the next week or so. I think that it would be really easy for me to jump on the Chargers in this division.
Oh, sign me up. I'm ready to get hurt again. No doubt.
You and I are in the same boat of knowing that the Chargers are tempting. Right now, or last time I looked, it was at plus 275. So they're the third best odds in the division. I love that. So, yeah, I mean, obviously everyone's been talking about the AFC West and how the AFC's kind of bulked up, and maybe that kind of changes things in relation to the NFC, right? Like, there's values that are kind of inflated with the Super Bowl, with some of these other teams. So I can't wait to talk about those things. It's really great. But, yeah, Davante Adams is a great player, okay? Please hear what I'm saying. I think his line right now is 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. That's his line, like, on DK. You can take the over-under on that, but in terms of it moving the needle enough for this team, they overachieved last year. Are they going to be better than that? I can't see that happening. I can't see them being a 11 or 12 win team at all. So if you want to leave a review, you can do that for us on iTunes. Subscribe and review. You can go to thefantasyfootballers.com. Betts and I are always updating our content, including some of our draft props, which we'll discuss today. That's on the site. Free article if you want to be a part of that. And we're going to keep releasing more and more draft-related content as we get closer. But let's talk about how we approach the NFL draft.
Straight cash, homie.
It's kind of a tease, if I'm completely honest, because NFL draft props won't make you the most money in the world, right? I mean, have you become a rich man because of this?
Sadly not. No, unfortunately not.
It's one of those, okay, so we talk a lot about over-unders. We talk about, you know, player props during the season. NFL draft props, I think, is a good exercise in general, whether you put money or not, of just seeing how you think teams shake out, team needs, and understanding just market values. Like, if this is just an exercise of understanding how the market works, I mean, it's super compelling. But with the NFL draft props, it's pretty sharp. Okay, so we're going to talk about this from a strategy standpoint and then get into a couple of props that you and I really, really like. But I'm just going to start off by saying these lines are pretty efficient. It's not easy to spot right away NFL draft props that are just like, wow, that's a screaming value. Why do you think that is, Betts? Why do you think the market is, I don't know, pretty sharp?
Well, the thing that's tricky about it is, unlike, you know, a normal sports book that offers, like, you know, lines and totals that are kind of based on algorithms, based off historical data, based on trends, that kind of thing. Like, that's extremely tough to beat. In these markets, someone is deciding out there. I don't know who this someone is, but someone is deciding, like, here's where the line starts. And then all of the books just sort of kind of ebb and flow and might follow that. Some are quicker to adjust than others, but it doesn't take a lot of money from people betting on something to move it very, very quickly. And so it's really tough if you're not getting those lines kind of right when they come out or right as news breaks or anything like that, you're going to miss out. And then at that point, you know, because this is so difficult to project and because the NFL draft in general, people are wrong about all of the time, you know, you get in these situations where you might hear advice from someone, whether it's us or whoever else, and all of a sudden these lines change and now there's such negative juice on them that when you're wrong and it's plus money, it's not a big of a hit. When you're wrong and it's minus 250 when it was a week ago, plus 150, that's a huge difference in your bankroll. So it's really tough to make money on that sort of situation. And I think you need to be able to adjust to news very quickly. If you're going to take this seriously, you need to be, you know, getting lots of information from multiple sources if possible. So yeah, they're pretty efficient. And like I said, they just move a lot quickly than they used to, at least.
If you have some intel out there on big lines, the ones that make the lines and set the lines for all the books, let us know, because it really is a process of, books are really good at copying each other, okay? They're not trying to be the one out there that, you know, is kind of astray. It says, hey, I left this at plus 200 while everyone else and the whole market has moved. So, yeah, if you're in on that conglomerate, just shoot us a little message on Twitter at FantasyPT at Kyle_Borg. But lines are really efficient, and betting on groupthink, like Betts said, isn't going to make you a ton of money. So remember last year, Betts, we talked about Micah Parsons being the first linebacker off the board. Looking back now, like, we're like, why would we not think that? Like, he was incredible. He was defensive rookie of the year. I mean, he got some votes for defensive player of the year. He was incredible. But I remember there was a point where he was at minus 450, like minus 400. You had to lay so much money for this to be right. And we both did because we were so confident in it. But it didn't make us a ton of money.
Right. And that's the tricky thing, too, is, like, unless you have an insane bankroll that you want to really go all in on this, like, yeah, you're not going to get rich doing it. But along the same lines as what you're saying, there's still sometimes quote unquote value, even when the line is sort of big like that. Like, we probably would have made the line closer to minus 500, maybe minus 550, minus 600. So, like, at minus 400, we felt insanely confident in that bet, even though it wasn't going to be the one that really built our bankroll. It's a small win and they all count, but sometimes you still can get, you know, still some value on those bigger numbers for sure.
And just to give you just some context of what minus 400, what some of these numbers mean, this year, Aiden Hutchinson right now is minus 400 to be the first overall pick. The implied odds of that is 80%. Okay, so DK Sportsbook, what we're talking about right now, is saying 80% of the time, they're saying this bet is going to hit for them. So that's a big deal. That's a big shift which we'll talk about with Hutchinson, from where it's been. But another key point is thinking about bets and thinking about draft props in terms of real percentages. And 80% and 75% may not sound like a big difference, but it is a monumental. Same thing with 50 and 51%. Those are big differences. So what would you give right now? So let's talk about Hutchinson, because I think he's the big story for you and I, because it shifted a ton in the last month. What percentage chance would you give him? Would you say 80% is a bit high for him to be the first overall pick?
It's tough, because it kind of seems like each day that passes that becomes more and more likely. Right now, I'd probably give it like 70%, something like that. So I think there's still, maybe this is overvalued. I'm not touching this by any means, but I think this is definitely a little overvalued.
I would agree. I think 80% is a bit high. I'd probably put the odds more like at minus 225 or minus 300, something like that. So with this pick, the information you have to go off of is you can either say, okay, here's what the Jaguars need, which they need a lot of different parts. We know they don't need a quarterback. But also, there's a major overreaction in the news when the Jaguars franchise tagged Cam Robinson, their offensive tackle. That shifted from the most popular guys being Evan Neal of the offensive tackle of Alabama and Ekwonu of NC State.
We'll just call him Icky.
Icky of the other offensive tackle. So both of those two were the favorites. And then when it was tagged, it kind of moved. Do you feel like that was an overreaction from the market just based on that news? Or is this saying, hey, this is telling us they're going to take him? Because the Jaguars have not come out and said anything. I think that is key. They didn't do that last year. It took them a while. We knew it was going to be Lawrence, but they didn't come out and say anything about Lawrence for a while.
They had Urban. No, let's remember who was there. tried to make Gardner Minshew compete for the starting job. So let's just recall that. Shout out to Herb. I don't think the Jaguars know who they're taking, to be honest with you. I think they probably have a short list, obviously. But yeah, I think the tagging of offensive tackle Cam Robinson, many thought, okay, then it can't be Evan Neal. It can't be Ekwonu. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily wrong. I'm just saying that like I don't give it an 80% chance that doesn't happen, that they don't take a tackle. So yeah, the market at this point has shifted far enough away that based off their moves, like Hutchinson makes the most sense as far as, you know, they shored up the offensive line, quote unquote, with Robinson, which, by the way, I think that franchise tag 2 years in a row was a horrible mistake. And then now that's probably telling us, like, if they think that that's going to solve the problem, then they go the other side of the ball. So that's what they're saying. I still think there's a chance that Ekwonu or Neal could go there. It's probably a smaller chance than what it was, you know, 3-4 weeks ago. And actually, this is probably a good time to bring up, too. If you look at our article, Kyle and I took, actually, Evan Neal and Ekwonu as separate bets to go number one at different odds. And obviously, times have changed and, you know, things have shifted in the market. But this is a great point to point out. Don't get stuck in your takes, because it's okay to admit that you were wrong and then kind of try to correct it with a different wager or something like that. So we definitely, I think, missed out on that. Screwed the pooch. I think that the odds shifted in our favor when we took them. And then, of course, it got away from us. And I will say I also have a little Hutchinson at plus 300. So I feel like either way, I'll walk out with a tiny little profit on this, which is good. But it is important to note, you know, don't get stuck on your takes too early in the process.
Boom shakalaka!
That was the sound of Vegas bets taking everybody's money over and over and over again, including ours. I will say this. What we know about Hutchinson is, yes, they did tag Cam Robinson. So offensive tackle seems like it's less. They also have Walker Little, someone they took from Stanford a couple years ago. He canceled his private workout with the Jaguars. Some people took that as, well, obviously he doesn't need to work out with him. But it was because David Ojabo, the Michigan player, tore his Achilles. And so as an agent, you're protecting your player from getting hurt. So he's still visiting these teams, okay, just so you know. He's officially visiting Hutchinson, the Jaguars, the Lions at 2, the Texans at 3, the Jets at 4, and the Giants at 5. So, yeah, he's visiting the top 5 teams. He knows he's going to be a top 5 pick. Some of them might just be more of a formality. I would say he looks like he's a top 3 pick locked in. And yes, 70% probably sounds good for him to be number 1, but there is room. And if you did want to, he's plus 400 to be the second pick to the Lions. If you wanted to go somewhere else, I won't be doing the minus 400. But yeah, Lions get efficient and be willing to, you know, figure out like where's the loopholes in this? What do we know? And right now there still is room, you know, a month away for interpretation. So you want to go next?
Yes, the other thing to consider for sure in general, just with strategy here, is make sure you shop around for the best line possible. I kind of talked about it a little bit already, but the difference between, you know, paying like minus 150 on one book and paying minus 110 on another book doesn't sound like a lot. But if you're making a bunch of wagers on this and you're actually trying to get serious about not losing money when you lose these bets, it makes a difference and it adds up. So shop around, make sure you have access if you can to multiple books. If you're living in states like Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Colorado, places like that, I mean, you have access to, depending on the state, like 4, 5, 6, 7 books if you want them. So don't be afraid to look around, shop around for different things. And again, because we said that these kind of tend to move in general as a big unit with these lines, you know, for example, like you're not going to see some random book out there that left Hutchinson at minus 150 to go first at this point. Like it's gone. You're going to see all the minus 400s, the minus 450s, minus 375, like something in that ballpark. But again, those little tiny differences, I think, are a big factor in terms of making sure you're having a plus EV bet on this sort of situation. I will also say we have one example here that I think we're going to talk about in more detail, Kyle, is this bet for the wide receivers taken in round one. So right now, the line out there for all the books I've seen is at 5.5. Now the juice is different other places. So as of earlier this morning on FanDuel, over 5.5 was plus 118. If you go over to DraftKings, it's minus 120. So you could almost just even ignore anything you think about this bet. And if you say, I like the over, if you have access to those two books, bet it on FanDuel. You'll make more money if you're correct and you'll lose less if you're wrong. So simple, obvious advice, but sometimes you just need to remind people, like, there are some small inefficiencies book to book. Just make sure you get the best line out there.
All right, before we get into this next part, we're going to take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids' session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
So you and I differ on this conversation. I think we were talking this morning. The line is 5.5 wide receivers in the first round. So let's briefly talk about this. I kind of like the under. If I'm not looking at the odds, not, you know, line shopping, I kind of like the under, but you're kind of into the over. So tell me why you're wrong.
I'm not kind of into the over. I love the over. I mean, look, like you look at any mock draft out there from any respected source, whether it's The Athletic's Dane Brugler, Daniel Jeremiah, of NFL Network, anyone, you'll see 5 wide receivers off the board. It almost seems like a lock at this point. And of course, things could change, but you got the 2 Ohio State guys, you got Drake London, you got Treylon Burks, and Jameson Williams seem to be in everyone's first round. Well, our friends, the Chiefs, trade away Tyreek Hill. They own picks 29 and 30, and there are also other teams back there. Go ahead.
Breaking news.
What if I told you that the Chiefs just signed MVS?
They are definitely taking a wide receiver. Then.
I really wanted to lead up to that moment and see if that would change the needle. And I think for both of us, it's like, not really.
What they gave him, what, 3 years, $30 million? Okay, like that's a decent amount of money. But the reality is, we've seen what MVS is. I still think they're going to take a wide receiver. So there's other teams there that also could use wide receiver help. And names that I've heard thrown out, Christian Watson was just mocked in Daniel Jeremiah's first round. I think it was to the Chiefs at 30. You're also hearing about Jahan Dotson. You know, Sky Moore has been a guy that's going like early round two in a lot of mocks. If a team loves him and they want to take him in round one, I don't think that's crazy. So there's just like a lot of ways for a 6th wide receiver to kind of sneak up into the back of the first. If you're getting it at plus money anywhere, I still think it's plus money on FoxBet at plus 100 at even money. I like the over quite a bit here.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm most curious about is how many of those wide receivers that we say can sneak into the first round end up just being top of the second. Like a T. Higgins, you know, Michael Pittman that we saw a couple years ago, like that's just where they end up. So do teams feel the need that they need to trade up in the first round to get one of these wide receivers? I don't know. Also, quarterbacks are a big thing that people trade up for and are one of those quarterbacks. We'll talk about them in a second. But your boy Matt Corral, does he end up being one of those guys that teams say, hey, I want them in the back of the first, and then that kind of slides everyone else down. So we'll talk about that. But yes, there's different ways that you can look at this. And I when I was talking with Betts, I was like, wow, this is a different bet on FanDuel than it is DraftKings. And of course, things move. Speaking of moving, I want to tell myself this information and anyone else out there, be willing to change your opinion because this isn't about what I would do for an NFL team. Okay. I know what I would do if I was Terry Fontenot, the GM of the Atlanta Falcons. You know,
would you do?
I probably would have held onto my heart a little longer and kept Matt Ryan around. But here's what I would have done. I wouldn't have picked Kyle Pitts this past year. As much as I like Kyle Pitts, I would have picked Justin Fields and taken him at 4 and then kind of had a transition year and then moved on from Matt Ryan. But here's where we are. Worst team in the league. Are they the worst team in the league? Seriously, though. Serious question. I'm asking for myself.
I mean, I don't want to hurt your feelings too bad, but like, I think the Texans win more games than the Falcons this year.
I started going through the Falcons schedule, and there are some tough games. Like, they play the Chargers at home, by the way, which I was like, well, that is my dream to go to a Falcons-Chargers game this year. But yeah, their schedule does not set up well at all. So that's what I would do if I was a GM. And the same thing with the Jaguars. Like, if I were the Jaguars, what I would do is I wouldn't have franchise tagged Cam Robinson, and I would take an offensive tackle. I would have taken one of those two offensive tackles at number one overall and go from there. I also probably wouldn't have spent as much money in free agency as them, because Warren Sharp tweeted this out, but they've spent over $1 billion over the last like 12 years in free agency.
That's crazy.
It's the most in the league, and they have the fewest wins in the league in that span too. It doesn't work.
Maybe it's not a great strategy. Just saying.
In terms of team building, it's not the best strategy. It's, you know, you can definitely splurge or go after certain people, but it's definitely not something that has been successful for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I thought that Evan Neal would be the correct pick, and he moved from the position of being the number one at plus 200, bet that, plus 150, bet that again. And then finally, he was at one minus 150, and it was like, oh, I'm not going to bet him anymore. He's the favorite. And then all of a sudden we get all this news and Aiden Hutchinson moves in. So the way that I diversified that is, instead of me just saying, I think they should take Neal, I put some money down, I had to be willing to pivot. So a couple of bets that I found early on is, I don't remember if I told you this, I have Evan Neal at over 1.5 at minus 120. That feels pretty
good.
Cool, dude.
Thanks for telling me. Appreciate that. Great bet for you.
That feels pretty good if he doesn't go first.
Are you making secret bets and not telling me?
I can't talk to you right now. I also, he's a consensus 5th overall pick right now in terms of just mocks, and we'll talk about where we get that information. But I have an over 3.5 for him as well. There's just so many different ways that you can go about this. There's also, I want to say this about quarterbacks, that's clearly the most valuable position in the sport, and there are teams that need quarterbacks we think should take a quarterback. You know, Atlanta, Carolina, Detroit, like all of us say they need to take a quarterback. And so a lot of people are saying it's Malik Willis at number 2, and yet nobody is hearing that information. I know you and I talked about that today, but like Malik Willis can be a fun fantasy quarterback, but mocking him number 2 to the Lions is kind of silly.
Yeah, he was the odds-on favorite to go to. I haven't looked at that in a little bit. I'm not sure if that changed or not, but yeah, I don't really know where that came from. I think maybe because they need a quarterback and it fits sort of thing, but I don't know. He just had his pro day, and of course that helps with buzz and hype and that kind of thing. But yeah, it does seem like a little bit of an overreaction for sure, especially when you consider, like I was talking about with Jeremiah's most recent mock, he wasn't even mocked in the first round at all. I mean, I still think he probably goes in round 1, but that says something a lot. And if the market assumes it's going to be a 2, I'd be out on that market for sure for Malik Willis.
I mean, there's the conventional teams that we would say, okay, well, Pittsburgh, they need a quarterback. Seattle, do they really like Drew Lock?
Nope.
Even Philadelphia, you know.
Hey,
sorry.
You don't like Jalen Hurts?
You guys need a long-term solution. at quarterback.
Okay. All right, buddy. Easy. You're going to lose to the Texans this year.
For sure. For sure. But the point is, there are things that I would do for a team. And this is what I would, but I'm not running a team. I'm sitting behind a microphone talking to some guy in Vermont. That's all I'm doing.
This is true.
This is a true statement.
Our opinion does not matter, right? That's the take home, is that your opinion doesn't matter. It's trying to get in the head of like what these teams have done. If it's a GM that's been in house for a while, what is their tendency? Like that kind of thing. So yeah, it's tough. You really need to kind of separate like the I know better than what this GM should be doing kind of thing. Because if you do that, you're going to be wrong quite a bit.
That I think that's what's so much of fantasy football, of DFS. There's things that I would do. I really think this player can do this. I would utilize this player in this way. I mean, I give Keenan Allen 200 targets. Why not? But that's not how things actually function. So it's being able to separate what I would do from what information is actually true and actually out there, and that's what you're going to talk about next.
Yeah, so the next kind of thing to take home for people is just to have a good resource of where you want to be able to find information. And the tough part about this is when we talk about it in DFS is trying to filter out the noise from like actual information that really does help. I think beat writers are a good source of information that I use a lot in season, especially when I do the Injury Blitz podcast. So like I'm trying to figure out, are these guys practicing in a limited basis? Are they on the field actually doing drills? Are they just on the stationary bike? Like beat reporters will tell us a lot of information about what's happening in that sort of situation, maybe with playing time, new roles, things like that. Beat writers don't have, I think, as much inside information about the NFL draft process as teams and as people might think. So if you look at like beat writers and they put out their mocks and stuff of what they think will happen with the team, historically, they're pretty inaccurate. So I would just be careful if you see, you know, so-and-so from the Lions thinks that the team should take Malik Willis at 2, all of a sudden it gets steamed up in the draft prop market. Like, just be careful with that because, again, beat writers aren't necessarily always accurate with those sort of situations. The other thing to think about, I think, is being able to kind of be able to look at mock drafts around the industry and get a sense of, like, what do people think? What does the group think right now? And kind of where is the market shifting? So we use grindingthemocks.com. I like that because it has the historical trends for a player. So you can see kind of where they're going. You can kind of sort by player. You can see where they were at in March, where their draft stock is at in April. Is it going up? Is it going down? Those kind of things. And then NFL mock draft database also is another good resource. Kind of lets you know what teams are most likely to take certain players, kind of what the mocks are telling us as far as consensus position of players being mocked. Those are things that I use all the time when we're looking at this. And then I would say, too, pick 3, 4, 5 mock drafts or NFL draft analysts that you like and trust. Because if you start to listen to 5, 6, 7, 8 people and you just take little bits of everything you hear, it's so tough to get this stuff right that eventually you'll be chasing your tail and you'll be in circles. So whether it's Daniel Jeremiah, whether it's Peter Schrager, who's been pretty accurate over the years, those kind of guys, Dane Brugler is another name that I've listened to. Like those kind of names, I think you should find yours that you trust and make sure you're plugged in.
Those are the exact names that I use. And, you know, have some variation, have some people that are a little out there. I will say I would stay away from people that have a fantasy bend for the most part. I mean, obviously you got to listen to us, but
stop the podcast.
But the thing is, if you're only going a certain direction, you're going to have people that are putting in their fantasy bias. So Betts and I are admitting, hey, it's easy for us to see things in a fantasy lens. We have to take off that hat in this exercise. Like we have to actually take away, here's what I would do. Here's the fantasy production. Here's what we could see happen. Because fantasy is about fun. It's about finding, you know, these games that go off, you know, that score a ton of points. We're looking at what does an NFL team with money on the line, real jobs, what would they do? So yeah, it's super important. It's really important to ask yourself the question. You know, you're mentioning beat writers. They're putting out information because they're trying to get people to read their stuff a lot of the time. Like they're not always plugged in for practice reports. They're there and they're seeing who's practicing, who's not. That's very real information, but it's very different than what does the GM put out there. So the 49ers last year, right? They were kind of clear about what they wanted out there and what they didn't want out there. And for a while, like, we don't know the full information, but it would make sense if they were the ones putting out the Mac Jones false information just to throw everyone else off.
What a time that was, huh?
Dude, Dude.
Man, the Justin Fields debacle for us was not good. Oh man, I kind of just like erased that from my memory, to be honest with you.
it was definitely all over the map. And yeah, let's talk about some of these props though. You and I are going to each share a couple different props before we get into our bold or cold prediction. I'm going to start off by talking about total quarterbacks. Right now, the line on FanDuel, which I bet earlier and it's moved. So what does that tell you, Betts?
I mean, you're moving the lines, no big deal.
Moving the lines. You can find it on FanDuel. Total quarterbacks at 3.5, and I'll take the under on that. It was at -172. Now it's at -188. On DraftKings, the line is at 2.5, which is scary to me. It's a really scary line because I think we both think Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett are going to be going in the first round. But I think there's room for a third for a team to trade up or to fall in love with someone like Matt Corral or Desmond Ridder, one of those two. So I like the under 3.5. And based on mock draft database, like 3 is the max. Some people are doing 4, but I can't see it really go above 3.
Yeah, I don't know what the over is as far as the juice on quarterbacks. If it's 2.5, I like the over. If it's 3.5, I like the under. I mean, in theory, you could probably possibly hit both. I agree with you. I think it seems like 2 is very, very likely, almost certain. And I definitely agree that there's going to be a third at some point. So this is going to be a sweat for sure. You know, on draft night, you're sitting there at like pick 25, 26. You're like, please do not anyone else trade up for a quarterback right now if you take the under. And I do like the under. I think there's going to be a name, like you said, that pops up. We've heard some buzz on Crow, a little bit on Ridder, not much on Sam Howell, to be honest with you. So it seems like 4 is the max. 2 is very, very likely, and 3 is kind of the sweet spot. So I like the under if you can get that. If you like the over on 2.5, I also don't hate that if you're going over on DraftKings.
All right, you need to give me 10 seconds on your boy Matt Corral because you just wrote an article that's coming out. Why do you like him so much?
Well, this man was mocked in the top 15 all season. Comes out, high ankle sprain in the Sugar Bowl, I believe it was. And then all of a sudden, we don't hear from him, right, for like 2-3 months. And people kind of forgot about him, and now everyone's enamored with Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett. And he just had his pro day, and the reports were glowing from people that were there, and there was a lot of teams that need a quarterback that are picking pretty high that were also in attendance. So, of course, teams are probably doing their due diligence, but I think the ceiling on him is higher than Pickett, in my opinion. Obviously, I'm no quarterback evaluator as far as talent, but I think for fantasy, I'm kind of excited about him over a guy like Kenny Pickett, who probably isn't going to add with his legs the way Corral can. And I think Corral's game, like his ability to escape sacks, move around in the pocket, create with his legs, just fits today's scoring system, at least for fantasy, better than Kenny Pickett, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's much more mobile. That if you didn't know anything about Matt Corral, you would go, oh, okay, cool pocket passer. No, like the dude can boogie, and he did at Ole Miss. So yeah, I'm excited for people to be able to read that because I know that it's somebody that you're like, hey, it means something if you're telling me, I think there's something there for fantasy. You know, you're not here saying he's going to make all the throws. He's obviously got to work on some accuracy stuff, but played really big in the SEC. And in dynasty drafts, I think he's going to be a fun, like, late second, early third pick that people just kind of, I've noticed that people just kind of pass on quarterbacks. They just wait and wait and wait, and they forget about them. And I think there's going to be some value there.
Yeah, we just did a mock for the UDK, for the dynasty pass. And I think he fell to like the back of the second, maybe even early third. I can't remember. But yeah, no one wanted him. People are kind of reaching for these like fringy wide receivers over him. So yeah, I like him as a value for sure.
All right, give me your next prop.
All right. This one I like a lot. It might be my favorite that I personally have taken so far. Did you take this one too?
I did.
Okay. So we're both on Charles Cross. He is an offensive tackle over 6.5 on his draft position, meaning he goes pick 7 or later. I got this at -130 on DK. The play here, there's two reasons. So the first one, if you look at some alternative markets, it kind of helps you gauge where maybe these odds should be. So when you look at on FanDuel, the first offensive lineman to be taken, it's Ikwanwu at -115, Evan Neal at +100, even money, and then Cross is a distant third at +1200. So the market is telling us there's a very, very, very small chance Cross goes before either Ikwanwu or Neal. It's still possible, extremely unlikely though. So when you look at 6.5, you say, okay, there's 6 teams that need to not take this player. We already talked about Aiden Hutchinson. We assume he goes 1. At 2, people are talking about Trayvon Walker. They're talking about these tackles. They're talking about Malik Willis. I haven't seen Cross anywhere close to two. So you say, okay, he's probably not at one or two. Then you look at the teams at, you know, three, four, five. Like at three, they need a tackle. They're probably taking Houston if Akwamu is available. He's there. The Jets have holes everywhere. They've been linked to Sauce Gardner in Daniel Jeremiah's most recent
mock.
Our boy Sauce. We're going to talk about him in a second. And then the Giants, they also have holes everywhere. They need to shore up their offensive line. So Cross, in theory, could make sense. But again, the market is telling us it's very, very likely to be Kwanu and Evan Neal in those top, you know, from picks two to six. So in the top six, but really not including one. And then at Carolina, like everything that we've seen about them is that they're in to Kenny Pickett. They were at his pro day. Apparently they were examining his double jointed thumbs or something like that. Like they're in the quarterback market. So I just don't see how he fits in the top six picks of the draft. And I haven't seen a mock there once, to be honest with you, in the last month of the calendar. So in his most recent mock, Daniel Jeremiah had him at number 9 to Seattle. And then on grindingthemocks.com, he's at 9.8 for his expected draft position.
Well laid out. Well laid out that this is, hey, this is something that we think people can get in on. It's only minus 130, like you mentioned, on DK. The scenario where this goes wrong is if one of the tackles go number one, and then it kind of slides up. And that's kind of, That's not what we have in front of us, though. What we have in front of us is that, you know, there's 80% odds that Hutchinson goes one. So that's what we have to work from. But I like that one a lot. Charles Cross, offensive tackle. Mississippi State, go Starkville. You ever been there?
I have not. Maybe one day.
I have been to a game or two there. My cousins went there. So, yeah, I got some Mississippi State ties. My next prop still has to do with offensive tackles. Maybe that's what our show is, kickers and offensive tackles. That's what people come here for, right?
Let's go. Let's go.
So the Texans right now, they have the third overall pick, and there are some dominoes that have to fall right before them. Jaguars, Lions. These are really bad teams, by the way. Jaguars, Lions, Texans.
Not great, Bob.
So if you think they're going offensive tackle, which is what I do and what you know, I think it's between one of these two guys. It's our boy Icky or it's Evan Neal. You can get both of them at plus odds in a way where you can just sprinkle a little on both. And because it's plus odds, you know you're going to be making some money. So I think at plus 175 for Icky, plus 225 for Neal, I think it's safe. The only other players I'm seeing them mock there is Kyle Hamilton, the safety, or Trayvon Walker, the defensive tackle out of Georgia. That's totally in play. I just think that offensive tackle is really on the board, especially if Hutchinson goes one, and we don't think the Lions are going to go offensive tackle. I think it's kind of set up for the Texans to take it there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's pretty good value on both of those guys for sure. And, you know, we talked about, don't get stuck in your takes. So, like, if you have some Neal at number one or you have Ekwonu at one, like, this is definitely a good way to hedge. So I'm with you on that.
All right, give me your sauce takes. The sauciest of takes.
The sauce takes. Sauce Ahmad Gardner. Yes, this is the cornerback out of Cincinnati who really wasn't on a lot of people's radar as like the top corner in the class until this past year. He had an awesome season for Cincinnati. Obviously, they made that college football playoff run. I like the under 8.5 for him in his draft position. I think he goes in the top 8. We talked about kind of how that top 6 or 7 picks look, but I also look at, again, these alternative markets. Right now, to be the first cornerback off the board, he's at minus 370 on DraftKings. I've also seen like minus 400, minus 450 on other books. So like, it seems very, very, very likely he's the first corner who hears his name called. You look at these defenses, like, you know, obviously with taking Jacksonville out of the equation, like Detroit could use help in the secondary. Houston, yes. The Jets, yes. The Giants, yes. If Carolina waits on quarterback, yes. Like, there's a lot of ways that he can kind of fit into there. Not to mention the Giants pick again right at 7. So there's ways that can go, I think, right for us. I think in the latest, like I said, for Daniel Jeremiah at his mock, he went 4th to the Jets. And if you look at his historical trend data on Grinding the Mocks, it's a constant upward trajectory, meaning every time a mock draft comes out over the course of the next several weeks, it seems like he's going to be more likely to land in the top 10 picks than not. And so I think at 8.5, I think you're getting pretty good value here.
The dude is huge, by the way. Like, he's, for a cornerback, he's not normal. And usually every year there is a team that falls in love with a cornerback and takes them in the top 10. So we think that under 8.5, based on what we're seeing in the mocks, feels really good. And so, yeah, I felt great. You mentioned earlier, like, him being the first cornerback it feels like almost a lock at this point. So do you think at minus 370 is what it is on DraftKings, is that worth it to you, kind of like how we did Micah Parsons this past year? Is that worth it? Because it's not at, you know, minus 400, it's not at minus 500. It's still there.
Yeah, I think it's reaching a point where I probably am not going to touch it, especially if it keeps going that way. So yeah, if you do like it that much, like, do it now, because it's only going to get more juicy, I think, as the weeks go by. So yeah, it's probably at a limit for me. I don't know. I just think if you're going to bet it, to me, you're almost kind of getting like the same bet almost, but just at much, much better odds, I think, at under 8.5. So I definitely wouldn't bet. I wouldn't bet both personally. I think if you want to play it extremely safe, I think that bet is very likely to hit for the first corner. But again, you're paying so much juice that you might as well just take the under 8.5.
Yep. No, that's a good point. We will talk about team needs this next week, where we will go through, you know, the top 10, 15 teams and kind of work through and say, here's what they need. We'll go position by position and say, okay, here are the teams that need quarterback. Here are the scenarios. And because of this, here's a draft prop we like. Okay. So it's kind of taking what we know about just football needs and then being able to compare that. So yeah, next week we will talk about that. Before we finish this episode though, I think it's pretty important that you and I give our bold predictions.
Ridiculously bold predictions.
Yes. I've been waiting for this one. I feel some steam. Feel some oomph behind this one. But would you like to go first?
No, since you're so excited, I think you should go first.
Okay. The reason why I want to share this one is because I've done some soul searching. I really have.
Great for you, Kyle.
All right, so here's my statement. And if you're new to this, Betts and I get to give a prediction and give it with the utmost sincerity. And the person across from myself right now gets to say, am I lying or not? Is this something how I really feel? And we'll talk a little bit about it. But I've done some soul searching. And here's what I want to say. After being all in last year with you, Betts, I was with you in this, on Trey Lance, I think it is time to trade Lance. All right? That's what I'm calling this, trade Lance. It's time to abandon
ship. This hurts my heart.
It's time to abandon ship. There are reports from, I don't know if you've heard of him, Adam Schefter, saying that this guy is further behind than people realized. And the fact that the 49ers are still holding on to Jimmy Garoppolo, it terrifies me. I loved Lance in terms of what he could do for fantasy, but QB is not a hill that I want to die on or would recommend anyone else dying on. So I would say now is the time to trade Lance.
And are you talking about the Niners should be trading him, or you are trading him if you're playing in like a dynasty format?
In dynasty format.
Whew, this is a lot to unpack for me, who, yeah, let's be honest, I had a financial investment in this man last year in best ball season. That was rough. That's an L for sure. That I'll remember that for a long time. Okay, let me think. So because I know the way that you think about wanting to be on the opposite side of what generally the consensus is, if you are hearing that people are starting to get really worried about Trey Lance as his value potentially plummets, I think this is wrong. I think this is a cold take by you, because I think now, when the news is coming out, might be the time to buy Trey Lance. And I don't know if that's my bias coming through, but that's what I'm going to go with. What's the real thing here?
You're darn right. It's time to hold on to this
man. Let's go.
Okay, listen, people.
Never a doubt.
Listen, people. Listen, this man turns 22 in early May. He would be the second youngest quarterback prospect in this class coming up, okay? So consider him a rookie. In the same way that we think about a rookie quarterback coming in, that's kind of where we're getting Trey Lance. But, he's had an entire year where we've gotten to actually see it showcased at least twice. And for fantasy, although it wasn't perfect, it actually translated. That's what I care about, is fantasy. His rush share in college was ridiculous. And here's a stat I want to throw out. Every rookie quarterback, and I'm considering Trey Lance in terms of his preparation, that crossed 80 rush attempts. 80 rush attempts in their rookie season was top 10 in terms of points per game pace. So yes, do not trade Trey Lance.
Go
fully in. And yes, I sound like my feet are stuck in concrete, but I am staying here.
Kyle's the guy in your dynasty who's like, you know, someone puts him on the block and immediately he's like, four firsts for Trey Lance. this is the value here. No, I'm with you. If people think it's time to get out, I'm in. Listen, the third overall pick on this guy, they obviously mortgaged a lot to get him. They're going to want to try to prove that they were right. And the thing that's crazy is like shout out to Jimmy G. He dealt with a lot last year from the media. He still came out and played decently well or well enough for that team to put them in the playoffs and beat Aaron Rodgers. So that's like hat tip to him. But the team like immediately afterwards was like, yep, we're trading Jimmy G. Like that's immediately what came out. So they're going to try to make it work with Trey Lance. I agree. If there's someone in your league that's down on him, I'm definitely making an offer. And, so I'm with you.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yep. Here's the thing. They tried to trade him. All right. They were very clear. He had his emotional kind of end of season post game conference, press conference thing. And now we're hearing these reports. Like, who's to say these reports aren't being leaked out that Jimmy G is that much more valuable to them? You know, here's the thing. They moved on at the end of the offseason, and they're not changing their mind, all right? They have so much invested, and it could get ugly, but it also could be great. They've seen flashes of greatness. He had as many play-action passing touchdowns last year as Jimmy Garoppolo in those two games. Trey Lance. So, yeah, stay in the flames.
All right, I'm with you. Never a doubt. Can't wait for him to not be good this year again. It'll be fun. All right, here's mine, okay? Patrick Mahomes. We're both going football on this one, so it's fun. Patrick Mahomes does not produce a wide receiver one for fantasy this year. And Travis Kelce does not finish inside the top two at the tight end position for redraft leagues. Despite all of the, you know, rhetoric out there, Tyreek Hill is gone. It's going to open up so many more targets for all these other guys. Juju's in town. He's going to catch like 180 balls from Patrick Mahomes out of the slot. All these things. No, he doesn't produce that. Patrick Mahomes is still good enough for fantasy, but he does not produce a top two tight end in Travis Kelce for fantasy or a wide receiver one on his team.
Okay, so there's a couple things here you could be pulling at just at in terms of age with Travis Kelce. Like, his target share is probably going up, or at least what we would project right now. Juju, I feel like you're not a Juju guy.
So
I'm trying to see through this. I think you actually believe what you're saying. I think it's actually true.
First off, I've died on the Juju Hill multiple times, but I'm officially out. Yes. Listen, Tyreek Hill, like, you look at what defenses did to the Chiefs last year, and it was kind of a running joke, right? Like, oh, if you just run cover two, you can stop Patrick Mahomes. Like, of course you can't do that. But teams were trying to do that because of what Tyreek Hill offers you. And listen, Travis Kelce, all he had to do was just like sit in the middle of the field and get these balls from Patrick Mahomes. Easy catches, easy yards. And for fantasy, we love that. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. I still think from a median projection standpoint, I think he still is going to project extremely well. You're going to want him on your roster. But are we going to see the same ceiling from a tight end who is obviously at an age where it's a little iffy? And now his running mate in Tyreek Hill, who opened up the field insanely for Travis Kelce, isn't there. Are we going to see the same? I don't know. And yeah, man, like the Mecole Hardman stuff, no thank you. Juju, eh. I mean, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, a rookie on there. Like, I feel like the way Pat Mahomes is playing right now, he's spreading the ball around. So I think for the first time in a very long time, we don't see a wide receiver one from Kansas City this year.
I like that take. I think it's measured. I think it makes sense. I think we can't just copy and paste what we've seen in the past from the Chiefs. They will be interesting when we talk about win totals and markets of what do we think of them, because defensively, they have some issues as well. So we can't just simply copy and paste from what we've seen before. Your dog agrees. All right.
Definitely.
Yep. Hopefully you can share more bold or cold takes with us. You can use that hashtag bold or cold. See if you agree with me about Trey Lance, with bets about the Chiefs. There's obviously some hot topics. But yes, next week we will get to talk more about NFL draft, NFL needs. So, Betts, why don't you sign us off in the best way possible?
Yes, I will do that. Hope everyone enjoy the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 this weekend. College basketball will be fun. We'll be back next week. Enjoy the weekend. Until then, we'll see you. We'll be right back.
you for listening to another edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.thefantasyfootballers.com.